I beg your pardon, we need to just say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay.
Ms. Bryson, can you lead us in the pledge?
Honored.
To all the young men and women who serve our country so that we're free to speak our minds, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. For consideration and adoption of the agenda, do we have a motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Can we have a roll call, please? Ms. Bowes.
President Adnesio.
Here.
Trustee Winston.
Here.
Trustee Christensen.
Here.
Trustee Brick.
Here.
Trustee Bryson.
Here.
Trustee Maddox. Trustee Palazzo.
Here. Thank you. Open session. Mr. Lebs.
Well, good evening. Tonight we are here for our facilities study session, and one of the topics tonight is the long-awaited presentation of the rollout of our facilities master plan, which really, in essence, is a needs assessment. A plan would really indicate that we have a pathway we're going to follow, but what they'll be presenting this evening is a needs assessment of taking a picture of where all of our facilities are and where they measure up in terms of standards, etc. The other two topics this evening, we have the Performing Arts Theaters, which is first up. WLC will be presenting their where we are in the process so far, and then as a second part to that item, we'll also be discussing just briefly the kind of where we are in budget. And then the third one is more of a kind of a kitchen table discussion on some of the challenges we're facing with relocatables for the coming year, as well as class size reduction and how that fits together. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bob Hensley and Betty Sable, who are here from WLC Architects, and then we'll start out with the discussion regarding the theaters.
Okay, thanks, Ron. My name is Bob Hensley again. I'm a principal architect with WLC Architects. And first of all, we wanted to talk a little bit about the performing arts theaters. We've been progressing along the time schedule that we provided the district. Our goal is to get the plans completed and into the Division of State Architect for review and approval as of, I think it was about mid-May was the timeline. And right now we're on track for that. We have submitted to the district the schematic design package. We just recently completed the design development package, and so what we want to share with you now is just kind of where we are to date on the projects and how things are moving along. So maybe Betty, if you want to
just go up there.
Do you need, does Betty need the other microphone? And what we'd like to do to keep this in a kind of an informal workshop mode is if you have questions as we're presenting, please just ask us. And I think that way we'll get an interchange going rather than us just doing a formal presentation.
Good evening. My name is Betty Sable. I'm the project architect for your theaters. And we just want to give you a progress report of where we are. We started this back in May with the catalyst of the CTE grant and met with site committees made up of staff, administrators, and district. And the first of the schools that we have here is the Capistrano High School. And this is the site plan of the high school and the location for the theater. Each of the high school's site committees looked at different sites and the best location for them. And for Capistrano Valley, that was true. And they quickly decided that the center of the campus was going to be the best location. Other options were this newly constructed courtyard, which nobody wanted to touch. And another option was a parking lot, which is very coveted at all of the high schools. Right, Mr. Nye? So the location is here at the heart, and basically we are proposing a fire access lane to the back as required by the Division of the State Architect. And moving along to what the floor plan is looking like now, we did develop these in conjunction with committee members, and initially there were diagrams and basically, we were going through exercises of how those spaces were being used, adjacencies, and how things needed to flow. What we have here is the theater, and in both of the theaters, Dana Hills and Capistrano, we have a two-story solution. Basically, the main floor seating with 322 seats and also balcony seating, which would make the total of 462 seats. The theater is entered in from the lobby space here and is accessible all the way throughout to the stage in both theaters. We have the academic spaces, which are part of the CTE grant, which include the choral room and its surrounding practice rooms and offices and music library spaces. Both of them have a scenery shop, which is accessible to the stage, as well as their support spaces. Band room for both of the theaters, and Capistrano also has an orchestra room, which is slightly different than the Dana Hills one. Both of the theaters do have a black box theater with dressing rooms off of the theater and access to the stage. And one of the things as part of our review with the facilities master plan is that we've seen the high schools especially are under on their toilet count. So we wanted to make sure, and this was brought up by the parents who participated in these committees, that these restrooms would be accessible to the student population. So we designed it in a way that it can be open during school hours and closed off so that they don't enter into the house. And then during events, it can be opened from the other side and closed off, or basically be open. So that will help alleviate some of the toilet count issues that are at both of the schools. Here is the balcony seating. Basically, both of them would be accessible. It would have a elevator to access. This is required by the Division of the State Architect and the ADA, really. And this is basically just theater seating and some accessible on the side. And by moving along here to the elevations, what we wanted to do is introduce a building in an established campus. We wanted to bring in the same materials that are already there. So some of it, as you can see, would be the brick veneer that you see at Capistrano. And other materials that are on campus are some plaster from the two-story building right next to it. And we also are introducing a masonry block, just again to economize and try to keep the project on budget. So this is the main entry of the theater as you're walking in. Here you can see. And then the back of the building, which faces the fields, is this one here. And then on the side, we're looking at this elevation here. And then on the other side, the east elevation here. We have also developed some three-dimensional drawings to help kind of better understand the project. So I don't know if everyone can see that, but basically this is done on a modeling program so that we take all the information that we have and then we develop these 3D models and we can show them in different perspectives. But this is the front entry for the Capistrano Valley High School.
I think it's important to note, too, that because it fits in pretty tightly with the existing buildings in the rendering, you can kind of see a ghost image of the building in the foreground. So you kind of walk around that building to get into the lobby area.
Oops. So we would enter where that arc is on the left-hand side. We would go across basically the open area. So there's the entrance.
Yeah,
right
this
there.
Is okay. This is the front entry, and this is the parking here, so there's a long walkway. This building is really tucked in the back of the campus, but this is the main entry here. So if I move along here to the Dana Hills High School, essentially the program is very, very similar, except for the orchestra rooms are different. This one doesn't have an orchestra room, but has a digital piano room, but it still has the same house seating numbers, and all of the academic spaces are the same. And I will mention that some of the support spaces that are included in both of the theaters are ticket and concession stands and all of the mechanical, electrical rooms that are required for a building like this. And the same thing with this theater is the double use of those toilets so that it can be accessible from the courtyard side from the courtyard, and then it can be closed off so it can be used by the people during the evening performances. I should back up here on the site plan and kind of review this, because this was really important to the committee and the selection. This one took a bit longer to determine the exact location just because of the different complexities and the limited space at Dana Hills High School. A couple of areas that we looked at were the corner of Stonehill and Golden Lantern, which was where all the portables were. We looked at the cost for that and moving those portables and what that would be, and that was an additional $3 million, so we scrapped that one. And then, of course, there was a parking lot, but again, Mr. Nye wouldn't give up one single spot, so we nixed that one. The best location is this one here that we have selected with the committee, and part of that too is the type of building. It's the theater, and it can go in the front of a school because of the type of use that it is, and we're also but in doing so here, we're having to relocate the existing tennis courts, and so we're proposing that they be relocated to this location here and basically create a athletic fields and tennis court just on one side of the campus. And we did provide Mr. Nye with extra parking, so we thought that was a good thing. And if I move along to the materials that we're planning on using is we're trying to...
I have a question. If I can go back for a minute to the first one. When you said they were concrete blocks, are they stuccoed concrete blocks or concrete blocks just laid and
they can be both. The bigger volumes for economy, we're just going to leave them with color, some colored and some painted, and then in the lower elevations they would have stucco.
Typically it would be a texture block like a split face or some kind of a decorative block.
Mm-hmm. But with that big of a volume, if we start adding plaster, then it's much more cost.
Well, it's a technique that's been used in Florida for a long time, and mm-hmm. in Florida for quite a few years, and I like the look of it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And on this campus, again, we want to just tie into the existing architecture that is there, so you'll see, for example, on the east elevation here that there's similarities to the existing campus, and then we're adding some new features, bringing in block, again, for the economy, and trying to give more accent color to that area. One of the things with the location of this building is the orientation is west, so we're concerned obviously of the direct sunlight coming in. So if we look at the entry elevation, then we have a deep canopy or shading device to block the sun from entering directly in. And I will show you then what we have here for the 3D model. And if that would be looking at the building from this direction here on the site plan. Does anybody else have any questions?
Did did you consider the rework that would be done interior to the school, since we would be moving the theater operations to an actual building outside of that? Is that included in the master needs assessment at all?
Okay.
What we did is early on, because we were looking at the entire campus at the same time, it was decided that the budget really couldn't support going back in and remodeling the interiors at this point. So we know that needs to be done, and that needs to be a part of the overall master plan solution. But our focus, because we needed to expedite getting the theater drawings done and into DSA, right now it's just the theater and the things that Betty's shown, such as relocation of the tennis courts, things that are integral to that happening.
Thank you.
Maybe I missed it. Could you tell me what the capacity is in each of these rooms?
The capacity for the theater is 462.
462.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the interior houses are the same, and all of the academic spaces around it are different because of the site conditions. Then I did want to go over with you the budget, and Ron...
Before we get to that, can I ask a few questions?
Sure.
Yeah.
First was, what drives the 462? Why did you pick that number?
Well, essentially the site committee, both of the site committee's target was 500 seats, and due to the site limitations and use of the stage, we had to begin to bring down the number of seats. We couldn't reach 500, so we've tried to give the sites as many as possible within the constraints of their site and the interior of the theater itself.
And the other controlling element was the CTE grants that were written define the total square footage that we could allocate to the project, as well as the total budget. So we were kind of constrained by how much can you build within the budget and the square footage allowance. So I think that balanced with what Betty's saying, the site issues kind of restrained the square footage or the number of seats.
Can you give us some context compared to the theater? Are there at San Juan Hills or in schools in other districts? Is that small, medium, large?
450 is real typical for most state-funded, state-built schools. We've seen larger ones. Oxnard had 700-seat capacity, and usually when they go larger than that is because the district makes a conscious decision to have a joint-use facility with the city or do something else. But 450 is pretty typical for a new high school.
And I've heard the term before, but I don't know what it means. Black box theater?
The black box theater is meant to mimic the stage, and so that's a place where it's a classroom space where the actors or students can basically rehearse off stage, but simulated stage.
Typically, you have sound systems and lighting systems duplicated in the black box. So if you're practicing your lighting and those things, you can do that effectively without tying up the theater.
Okay. And why the distinction between the orchestra room at Capitol Valley and the digital piano room at Pinehouse?
It was strictly a site decision and the programs that are offered by those schools.
And can you give me some orientation? Well, one last question about the Dana Hills site. What is now where you want to put the tennis courts?
Just field space.
Okay, so we're going to lose some field space is the trade-off there.
Right.
Okay. And which is the street on the right going up and down? Is that Golden Lantern?
Yes.
Okay. And for Capitol Valley, the parking lot on the right is the main parking lot when you drive in?
The parking lot below is the main parking lot.
Okay.
So
the one off to the right is a larger parking lot. I think that the one below is the one that's right below the administration building.
Right. And that street that's shown there is Via Escalar.
Okay. So the large one is the one that feeds into the gym, right? Is that right? No,
the smaller one.
The smaller one?
Smaller one, yes.
Okay.
You can actually, we've done the three-dimensional model that created this drawing. We've overlaid it on the campus, and we could show you at a future date how you can actually look at the campus and the modeling of it, and you can see the theater pretty well, mainly because of the volume of the fly tower and all. So I think that even though it's tucked back there, it'll be easy to identify where the entry is.
Will that be visible from the freeway?
I don't know, because your elevation change, we haven't really looked at that line of sight.
Just curious. And the Dana Hills Theater, you mentioned the sun issue. Is the canopy or the shade device you're talking about built into the budget and the design now?
Yes. It's part of the structure.
Oh, it's built in?
Yes.
We just can't see it. It's not like a sunsetters thing that we see on TV, that you push the button and it rolls out?
Yeah, it's actually part of the building structure.
It's okay. Just basically recessing the windows to a degree so you don't get a lot of direct sunlight.
Okay, so we're not asking for a future problem with air conditioning?
No, we shouldn't be.
Okay. They look real good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Can I ask one more question with regard to Dana Hills and the tennis courts before we get to the portables that the students are taking academics in? Is it problematic for them to, are they then going to have to cross the tennis courts to get into the portables?
This is our schematic design presentation here. We have provided the further along the design development package where we have the civil engineers' drawings already in place. So we do know that we do need some ramps in here. So I believe that there's a ramp in here next to the tennis courts that will tie the upper portables to the lower part of the campus.
But I believe right now the students follow almost that same path to get to the portables.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Yes, how many sets can you stack? Are they raised? Where are you storing the sets? Do you have lifts for the sets, or where are they stored?
You mean the sets for the stage?
I think you're talking about the stage, the backstage area.
Right. Yeah, the scenery shop here has overhead storage as well for some of the flats, and it's intended that the scenery shop is directly accessible to the stage, so the sets can be carried right into the stage as well as the Black Box Theater.
Well, I have to say, it's very exciting for me to see this because I am and remain an equity actress. So all I can see is the excitement of the opening night. I think the buildings are beautiful, and I will be ecstatic personally to have these available to the students. Sosha and all the students at Capistrano have waited a long time. And as I said, that was part of my life still, so it's really exciting. It's wonderful. They look great.
Thank you.
We also wanted to, just as Bob mentioned, the schedule, I believe Ron has passed it out as part of the package, but we're presenting to you both of the budgets as were approved, and we continue to maintain that. As we further develop the drawings, we will begin to fine-tune this a bit more, but this is the numbers that you approved in October and then reviewed again in December. The schedule that is on the back page kind of represents the level of completeness. The grayed out area is where we are right now. We have completed the design development package, which we just presented to the district last week, and we have here in the form of notebooks. And it was a part of a contributed effort by the district, the maintenance and operations, and the design team who met together to, the design team met with the district to hear their preferences on the designs and specifications of the project. So we've presented to them an outline specification of what systems are going into the project, and they reflect the preferences that the district has for maintenance as well as sort of the finishes that are going into the projects, and their preferences again for materials and cleaning and so forth. So the district will be reviewing these, and we expect to get feedback from them if there's anything else that they would like to see, especially for the maintenance of the facilities.
Can these theaters be utilized to show films?
Oh, sure.
Is there a screen or some?
Yeah, there'll be a screen, an automatic screen that would roll down, and there'll be projectors and things as a part of the equipment that goes into the theater.
Okay, so the rear projector housing up above,
mm-hmm.
and that's in the design?
Yes.
Great.
what I just... Any more questions?
No, just can we put this on the website for the individual schools so that the people at the schools
sure.
in that area can look?
Yeah.
And we do have one blue card on this item.
Okay.
Someone to speak. And that would be Ms. Jenna Minnick Harry.
Is the proposed fee schedule will be coming to you in April at the April board meeting?
Thank you.
So,
good idea.
She said that we have received it, but we have not received it.
I believe we reviewed it with you at a facility study session back in the fall, and so it will be coming to you with a recommendation at the April meeting.
I'm also in regards to San Marcos High School. I believe that has been given to the board because the peer manager lost to it.
Thank you for your comments, Mr.
What is it? What's involved in the time delay?
Staff has been discussing it and working on it and trying to come up with an appropriate way to determine those fees. We had originally brought it at a facility study session and intended to bring it back sooner. It just got delayed. We're bringing it in at the April. It'll be agendized on the April board agenda for action. One of the challenges we've had in that process is trying to find something to compare it to know what's an appropriate cost for that, because typically what we try to do is have a nexus between what it actually costs us to operate it and what we're charging. So we had to kind of work through that because this was new to us, a theater of that caliber. But we have been working on it. It has delayed somewhat, but it is coming to you in April.
That would be a good skill to develop, because with these theaters and with whatever happens with San Clemente High School, certainly in the world we're moving, it's going to be lots of rentals, the more the better. And make sure we make some money on it, so not just for cost.
Trustee Bryson?
Understanding your interests in that, because I think I was the first person to mention the rental of the theaters a number of months ago. However, you have to understand that we have to make sure we have operating budget for 52,000 students, 5,000 employees. Certainly no one can be more enthusiastic about the theaters than I am. However, there are hard-pressing realities. And if it's been slow to come forward, it's not because of lack of desire. The staff is really having to push very, very, very hard to give us accurate numbers for what we're looking at as a board. So bear with us a little bit. I know that everyone's doing the best they can right now. Mr. Libs, you're up.
I wanted to just take a moment to go over the theater budgets with you, the construction budgets. Bob and Betty can probably address these a little more directly, but in the handouts I gave you, there is the budget for both Dana Hills and Capistrano Valley. I believe we've been going through these as we've gone along to make sure that they're up to date and staying on course. In talking with Bob this evening, I know that construction costs are slightly more competitive today than they were 6 months ago, so there's hope there. What I wanted you to do is just take a look at this. If you have any questions, then we'll be happy to address that, and then I'll talk about the second handout, which is the funding piece.
Where's the color key code? What do the different colors mean?
Basically, nothing has changed here from what we had submitted last time. What we had in the color key code for ourselves was we were trying to identify for the district what is the total project cost, which is the column with most of the numbers on, in the center of the page, taking it down to essentially $12 million. The numbers on the far right are basically the numbers that it takes to move the project through the DSA approval process. So we were kind of jumping back and forth trying to highlight in the yellow boxes what percentage of the fee would be required and versus what had been approved. The board essentially approved our fee. I think the confusion was the board approved our fee for the project when it was first authorized to move forward, and then there was discussion about, well, let's incrementally approve it through the phases when we get through the DSA approval. So the yellow boxes are really showing what the board has approved to date. So if you add up all of the items in the yellow boxes, that kind of gives you the full authorization to date.
And the pink is already approved as well?
Yes. Well, the pink was just highlighting the architect and the CEQA consultant fees, which were a part of the initial approval. So even though they were approved for their full amount, they're really the only thing that would be approved through DSA, should the project stop for any reason, would be the amounts on the far right.
And in light of the fact that the cost of construction seems to be the only thing going down these days, how are we taking that into account here? Are we not?
Right now, we're just kind of holding with the numbers that we used at the beginning of the estimate. I think what we would typically do is once we get the construction documents completed, then we'll do an itemized takeoff, because most of these estimates are just generic in terms of rough square footage costs through experience and examples. When we get down to the final estimate, we'll make any adjustments that we think are appropriate. It's difficult to really tell the market right now because things have been dropping so rapidly. You know, are they going to bounce and come back up? I mean, we'll have to. At the time we go into DSA, we'll estimate this thing projected a year down the road when it would be bidding, what we think the cost would be at that point.
And the cost we would be reimbursed by the state on this per project is?
Well, a portion of the state is funded through the Career Technical Education Grant, which is $3 million per project, which if you go to your funding sheet, which is the black and white copy, and there's information on the back. I was trying to save paper this evening, so I printed two sides, and the item on the back has to do with the relocatables. But if you go to the funding sheet, then this is basically the same information that was presented when we approved the project, and it goes through the various funding opportunities for each of the theaters there. And you can see the first column is the Career Technical Education Grant, and that's $3 million per project. But that's predicated on getting the approval through DSA by December. So that's what the push has been and what we've been trying to do.
Yeah, and built on the assumption that the state will release the money at that point in time. Right now, they're kind of sitting on everything.
This was part of what they ended up freezing, was the construction funding. Fortunately, we didn't have a big school in process where they froze it in the middle of the project.
They'll be using our refunds too.
Maybe they'll just write us an IOU for this.
Thank you.
The rest of the columns there, if you take a look at it, I just would like to point out is that the board has approved this through DSA approval. up to the point that it would be ready to bid, and then we would bring it back to you for authorization to proceed. I do want to point out, and this ties into our discussion a little later on regarding class size reduction and relocatables for that, as well as just flexibility, is that if we captured all of the funding that's available along here, there's virtually nothing left to do other projects within the district. So the way it's penciled out is that there's still $4 million that approximately that we would need to generate for Dana Hills, unless, of course, we just captured everything out there that was available, which brings up some issues of how do we continue to balance other facilities' needs as they come along.
Ron, how much of that, when we had our prior discussion, was asked to be Alan Wickstrom representing SOCIA and their fundraising efforts? Where are we with that?
Alan has indicated that they're willing to raise money and generate some funding for this. There was never any formal direction or communication from the board to Alan and his organization regarding what they would like to see him raise. That was a question that he needed to bring back and have an engagement with the board.
Can we hopefully have that conversation again so that we see where they are and where they want to go with that?
I can contact him and let him know that you would be interested in hearing from him.
Tell him no private fundraising, it's likely no theater. That's just the reality we're looking at.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Any more questions on the theaters? We'll move on to the... Okay, we'll move right on to the long-range facilities master plan, and I will turn this over to Bob and Betty again.
Okay, take us just a moment here to change some of the boards out. I'd like to do for just a moment here before we jump into presenting the various boards that we've set up for each of the families is to go back and talk a little bit about what we were hired to do in terms of our scope of service. There's a few components here that are primary to the facilities master plan. The first was the facility surveys of each of the campuses. That was probably the most time-consuming component of what we did, and that was essentially taking the needs assessments that you had prepared the previous year, going out to each of the sites ourselves, our consultants, our electrical, mechanical, structural engineers, and our construction management crew to photograph and document all the existing conditions. And what we tried to do was to categorize all those conditions into different areas of topic, one being ADA accessibility, fire life safety, structural issues, mechanical issues, electrical issues that would apply to each of the campuses. So that was a large component of the work that we have done. In developing that information, we've compiled it into spreadsheets and an Excel spreadsheet that basically allows us to go in and look at any of those topics. We can link to any of the photographs that show the issues that we're discussing and also give this information on a campus-by-campus basis or family-by-family or district-wide. So our goal was to identify all the pieces and components that we could bring forward to the board so as we get into two discussions of goals and prioritization of what you want to do, we could present to you the pieces of that. Another major component was for us to look at the funding source analysis, and that goes back to some of the discussions here on the CTE grants, is understanding what eligibility that you have with the state in both modernization and new construction. So we've identified that pretty much on a campus-by-campus basis where it applies, so that is when you get into discussions of doing a renovation, replacing relocatables, whatever it happens to be, we understand what the impact is with other possible funding available.
projects, schedules, and budgets. I'm kind of jumping over here because this is kind of the order that we're looking at them. We've identified projects to the extent that we've met with the campuses and we've met with the principals and we've talked about what are the needs for each facility so we can kind of understand the perspective of what appears to be needed. We've also looked at those projects in terms of measuring campuses for minimum essential facilities, and we'll get into that in a minute when we go over the diagrams. But basically, that's looking at a campus. If you were designing a new elementary school today, what would you have in that elementary school? You'd have a certain size administration office. You'd have a certain size multipurpose library media center. And we measure the standards that the Department of Ed would recommend today with what you have. Because one of the key elements that was brought up when we were interviewed for the project, and I think it was in the RFP that the district had prepared, was the idea of equity among the campuses. Because what's obviously happened, I mean, you look at the history from 90, I think it was from 90, from about 2006, you had doubled your enrollment, you had built on average 2 to 3 campuses a year, and I think that the focus was get the next school open, you know, provide space for the students, so there was a definite rush through that time period. Now there's, even though this is not good to have this kind of economic slowdown, there's an opportunity to kind of assess where you are and where you need to go moving forward. So I think we're seeing the pattern was that there was a lot of energy and effort placed on the new facilities opening, and that some of the older facilities are the ones that maybe need to be brought up in terms of equity to have performing arts theaters where it applies, or library media centers or administrative space that supports the campus and follows what the state would recommend in terms of minimal essential facilities.
Excuse me, I want to ask you, when we had that initial meeting, Ellen, Larry, and I were there, I mentioned at that time that I was very concerned about the proper lack of place for students to sit and eat lunch, that many of the schools, most of the schools, were executed without any cafeteria or even semblance of or place for students to have a civilized time when they eat. They were out in the rain, sun, whatever, under little, you know, covers on walls. Did you apply any of that concern to these?
We did. A lot of that was brought up on a site-by-site basis. And we've jumped to developing some concepts for sites. But tonight what we want to do is we want to talk in broad terms about topics and issues so that we can get some feedback from the board about how we address those. And then we can break it down to talking about campus-by-campus solutions. But we did address the issue
that
you're talking about.
That remains a very big consideration for me.
Some of the other areas that we've looked at briefly was demographics was not too difficult because things haven't been growing real rapidly. Although we do have some growth, you know, and need for relocatable classrooms for the next year. So that was a little surprising, really, because most school districts, we work with about 40 school districts across the state, so we see the real typical pattern of declining enrollment or just flat enrollment. So it's unique to have any enrollment going forward. So we'll be addressing that as we show the individual plans later on. Program design standards, Betty had mentioned earlier tonight about what we're doing with the Dana Hills and the Capistrano Valley Performing Arts Theaters. We've met with maintenance and facilities, people within the district, to talk about the standards because that kind of dovetails together with our facilities master planning effort. Our goal is at the end of this process is to have a district standard specification so that you know what products you consider to be equal. If you're going to be bidding out a product and there's 3 equal manufacturers, that's best case because then you get more competitive bidding. If there's certain manufacturers like your door hardware or HVAC equipment that you think it's critical that that be a proprietary type of spec, we can identify that as well. But the goal being that you would have specifications that aligned with whatever you wanted to do and whichever firm you hire to execute the work would have that as a guideline so you get consistency from project to project. The key issue that we're leading to in all of our conversations here and with the workshop is getting back to line item 1, which is defining the goals and the objectives. We've been trying to collect all the information and get all the background stuff so that we could share with you what we found out. And in doing so, we're hoping that that'll generate kind of the idea or the thoughts about where are the priorities. We've put numbers to a lot of this information, so we haven't got it down to the fine science of exact dollars, but I think at least we can give you dollars that are within a degree so that you'll you'll know when you're talking about, for instance, there's a lot of discussion about replacement of relocatables. You know, what would be the impact if the district was to actually try to replace all the relocatables? And that's pretty substantial. So at least when you see those numbers, it gives you an idea of how realistic is that and how can that fold into the priorities of what's really achievable. Our target window for the facilities master plan was to develop a 10-year plan so that going forward you'd have some kind of a game plan showing what you'd be trying to accomplish over the next 10 years. We had a few additional services or optional services that were approved at the time of our scope of work was approved, but the district had asked us to hold off on pursuing those or doing anything more with those until we've kind of finalized the facilities master plan. They were developing project procedures manual. There was questions about district-wide processes of when you go out to bid a project and just the processes involved, making that more of a documented process so everybody understood these are the steps you take when you're bidding a project, these are the steps you take during the construction phase. So we've held off on that. And then the last one was the educational specifications. Because internally you were going through some of that study yourself and determining what programs or what modifications to existing programs you were going to provide, that was something that needed to be done internally before we could add to that. And when we talk about educational specifications, we're talking about it from a facilities end. How are we designing or programming facilities to represent what you want to do from an educational point of view? So we're kind of waiting on those. Are there any questions so far on what we've talked about? Okay, we'll go ahead and maybe we flip these first boards, Betty. What we've tried to do is we've tried to... This sounded real good back in the office, but suddenly you get here and you realize how many boards you're dealing with. Is we wanted to show all of the families and all of the school sites because we thought it was important in terms of scale of an issue that we see everything at one time. Because sometimes when you isolate just one campus, you're looking at that and you're not really realizing the impact across the board. Our first topic was to talk about joint use of school sites. And you can see on the diagrams here really just the areas that are highlighted in green, give you an idea of which campuses currently have joint use on the site. And I think the things that we've noticed is that some of the joint uses are more successful than others, and I don't know when all these occurred and when the joint uses came into play, but some of the campuses tend to have what I consider successful in that the intent normally for a joint use facility, especially if it's a district-owned property and you have somebody come in to provide joint use, is that they have advantage of being able to use those facilities after hours, and they pay for maintenance and upkeep and development of the site, but in return the district uses the facility during the day, so there's kind of a shared use. And I think in majority of the sites do work that way. There are a few sites that are a little troublesome in terms of maybe the way it was designed, the joint use turned its back on the district site, so you find when you go to the campuses and you ask the principal, no, we don't really use that field because it's not easy to supervise the students or it's not practical to use the school that site during the day. So I think for those sites, when we get into a discussion of individual campuses, we might want to look at a better way to address the joint use for existing ones that don't seem to be working out quite as well as they could. And then there's also other sites that have opportunities still to do joint use that really haven't been confirmed whether or not you'd like to do that. Yeah, we went through and kind of labeled them. Yep.
Right.
And I think you see, like on Elisa Nagel, when we look at this site here, there's three campuses that are, from a practical point of view, aren't used during the day. And most of the sites are very small to begin with. I mean, normally an elementary school site, if you went to the State Department of Education, they would tell you you need about 8 or 9 acres for that school site. Many of them are smaller as it is, and then if you cut the joint use portion off of them, they're very small. So I think that's a concern that we would have, that we need to figure out how to better utilize the space that you have ownership of so that you're not squeezing the sites down too small.
So the school district does own the sites?
I believe so. I think it's all of the joint uses. Is that right, Ron? I believe the district owns the property and that the joint use has been the city agreeing with the district to develop the property. It obviously saves the district money because they develop it, they maintain it. So it's a good idea. It's just a matter of how you coordinate the joint use.
And some of it is listed as park site, which is adjacent, and so that's owned by the city and maintained by the city, but there's an agreement to use it by the school. So that will be indicated in the packets as well.
Are these strips not to protect the residents in their homes from noise? Isn't it also a barrier?
I don't know about that. Maybe it is if like Betty said, if it's a city park and they're just allowing you to expand the school onto the city park, then maybe it would be more of a barrier. But I think if it's essentially a school site to be used for school purposes, then I don't think that would really apply.
Some of the schools depend on the green space of the parks to make up for the smaller areas that they have. And some don't use it at all. Some of them, as you will read through, are limited use, and they use the parks occasionally on picnics, maybe a few times a year, and they essentially will give notice to the district that they're going over. But it's very limited use in some cases.
To me, it seemed like that most of the time it had to do with the line of sight. Burgesson Elementary School, is you have the baseball fields with a chain link fence here, and kind of the fields are set up against that. So it's not really practical for kids to go out and use the field if you're trying to supervise them within this area here. So I think a lot of it just had to do with their initial layout. Was it a layout that was friendly to joint use versus one that was more internalized just for the park site? We don't need to dwell too much on that. That's just a topic that needs to be addressed.
Frankly,
what you brought up here is rather horrifying. When you've got not used during school sites on so many of these, that obviously the original deal that drove the development of these joint use agreements was ill-considered if the school staffs are not using the fields. At Moulton Elementary, you've got no access to baseball fields. Does that mean they literally have, from what I'm looking at here?
Yeah, and I hate to say that that's a rule, because you don't know. That it may be depending on how the principal utilizes the site or the teachers, it may have changed over time.
Well, we've got a constituent here saying they are being used, so... Okay, then there's some issue with the information here.
Well, I think, like you're saying, that to use it, they need to be supervised. Normally, a playfield wants to be contingent, or it needs to be a continuous space so that it's easy to supervise the playfield and wherever the kids are without making it a special trip. I guess that's all we're saying. We don't mean to make a big deal about it. I think it's just an issue of making sure that the supervision is adequate so that the district can use the sites easily without having to make a special effort.
One last question about the joint use, if you know, Ron. These agreements in perpetuity, do they expire at some point?
Yeah. I'm going to have Carrie address that, because I wasn't really... Actually, the agreements date back quite some time ago, and they all, well, not all of them, many of them are different from each other. So some do expire, and some are renewed annually, and some are in perpetuity.
So we could develop some level of uniformity with regard to our joint use agreement.
We certainly could, yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Brockman.
Are there any other questions on the joint use?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Okay. The next topic that we wanted to jump to, and I think this is an important one because it has to do with ADA accessibility, structural safety, fire life safety on the campuses. And what we've tried to do here is highlight in general the types of issues that we've run across on the sites. I think one of the bigger ones was ADA accessibility, because over time ADA code requirements have changed. Slope requirements that used to be okay back when the schools were originally designed and built are no longer okay, and so all it takes is really somebody to complain or file a claim against something, and then you need to act in some way. We've gone through all of the sites, we've identified and categorized all the ADA issues that we can see, and have estimated some construction construction estimates for what it would take to address those. Part of that is so that if you decide to do a project like the Performing Arts Theaters at Dana Hills and Capistrano, we're aware of the issues. So while we're doing those projects, we'll try to pick up a few of those ADA issues that relate to path of travel to the theater, as Betty mentioned, restroom accessibility, and other things that we can include. Structural safety, there really wasn't many issues that related to structural safety, although there were a few minor areas that our engineer picked up that could easily be addressed. Fire life safety, the primary item that we saw was a few of the fire access lanes weren't fully developed or weren't unobstructed. There's some things that need to be done just to improve and make sure that you have fire access to all the buildings and meeting all the code requirements. We looked across the entire district and trying to remember the number, it seemed like it was about, I don't want to throw too many numbers out, but I thought that was an important one because of the cost. Oh, here it is. It was about $19 million in terms of total district cost of addressing all the what I consider critical issues as fire life safety, ADA, and structural safety. So for a district of your size with 50-some campuses, that wasn't as big a number as I might thought it would have been.
Yeah, it's shown here in the San Clemente. It's all marked off because there's some quite a bit of challenge with the accessibility of that entire campus. So it's been highlighted as a real need there for accessibility. And it's the Ole Hansen. It's still on record as Ole Hansen campus, but it's the upper ninth grade campus for San Clemente High School.
Okay. It's
a part of the San Clemente High School. You're seeing it here, and you're just seeing it off to the corner of the site. So
that purple line,
yes. Right. Those are indicating all of that area needs to be addressed for accessibility.
Yeah. And there's a lot of different ways that you could go within the master planning on this campus when we talk about it, because the grade is such a higher grade here for this campus. To have kids continually walking back and forth really creates a need for an elevator or something like that to accommodate.
There, is it?
It's marked on your joint use site.
Okay, but not. I'm
right.
Yeah.
You're right.
In terms of our concept diagrams, we're considering that a part of the San Clemente High School site.
Right. You're right.
Thank you.
Are there any questions about these diagrams or what we're trying to communicate here?
So we have $19 million, roughly, let's say $20 million worth, to bring this up at least to ADA and structural soundness. And how much do we have in our coffers for that?
Well, if you build a theater, you have a bunch of loans.
Okay. And if we don't build the theaters, do you want to address that now or at another time?
We weren't planning to address budget on these projects this evening. What we envision is this is the first of a maybe 3 to 4 part rollout.
Right.
We have some budget discussions, some prioritization process, kind of drilling down into each one of these.
Thank you.
Can I ask him a question?
Bryson.
When we were discussing Capistrano's theater,
mm-hmm.
are you going to reaffirm how much Mission Viejo is going to put in? Because as I understood it, that was close to 50% of the funding for that particular theater.
That's on your sheet, and that's the CFD 87-1.
Right.
That is. So it's over 50%.
Okay, the next area that we looked at here was the minimal essential facilities. And again, the idea there is to look at the core buildings within a campus, look at the administration, look at library media centers, look at multipurpose buildings, and other support spaces within the campuses. And if you look at the diagrams, you kind of see that it tends to be the older campuses that have the higher requirements. looking at Dana Hills High School here, you're seeing the need for additional library, media center area, multi-purpose remodel expansion. Administratively, it's a fairly small administration building for a campus of that size. So without getting into too much specifics about any one campus, the idea is that the older campuses tend to lack a lot of the minimal essential facilities that are required if you were to compare them to a newer campus. And I know that it's not always possible to provide everything new, but I think the idea of having equity among the campuses, it's worthy to look at so that at least you know if you're going to build new facilities, where are the priorities in doing that. Are there any specific questions that I could answer regarding the minimal essential facilities?
What was the process that you used to decide what was minimally essential?
Well, if you take an example, if we were to build, or you were to build a new high school today, there's state standards that tell you essentially about how much area you're going to get for a campus. There's requirements that classrooms be at least 960 square feet. So by the time you provide all the classroom space that you need, you're left with a lump sum square footage of area, and normally that gets distributed between the other areas like your administration, library media center, multi-purpose, performing arts, or whatever you have. So what we're doing is we're looking at your campuses and saying, if you were to build this campus today, what would you have? And in doing that, we can kind of compare a typical program for either an elementary school, middle school, or high school, and we can see where the deficiencies are. For example, I guess an elementary school would be easy. Normally in elementary school, you would see, I'm just pulling this off the top of my head, say 4,000 square feet for administrative space, or say 2,000, wherever it is. We will take that measuring stick and use it against each of the campuses based on the enrollment. And it's going to vary slightly, but at least it tells you where you do have obvious deficiencies. If you have an elementary school that has a library that's basically a classroom that's being used for the library media center, you would know almost by instinct that that's not really correct. If you built a new library media center within a new elementary school, it would be, you know, about double that size, 2,000 square feet. So those are kind of the measuring sticks that we're using. And these are recommendations from the State Department of Education. That's where the numbers come from.
We did go ahead and estimate the existing square footage against the California Department of Ed requirements. So where we found a deficiency, then we recommended either a remodel if there was an adjacent space or an expansion, and that's kind of what you're seeing in the highlighted areas. We also did note, too, that on the middle school sites, one of the minimum essential facilities that is lacking is a gymnasium. So the middle schools are all showing that as an expansion or a new.
Did you go through a process with the faculty and staff and parents at each school?
Well, there was a needs assessment that was done about a year prior to us coming on board, and there were staff comments that were collected, and we incorporated that. We did meet with the principal to reconfirm those assumptions and understand again that if that was still a need. So we talked primarily with the principal and some of the staff members at our site visits. We were holding off and going back and talking about actual planning for the campus until we got some feedback from the board regarding objectives and priorities.
So what you have here, kind of jumping pages, but really it's very academic and hypothetical at this point.
Yes. Yes, because it's showing where the needs are, showing what theoretically could happen, not saying that these things should or shouldn't happen, but it gives you a degree of difficulty for each of the tasks. If you were to do this, like I said, with the relocatable classrooms, if you were to attempt to replace them all, what's that degree of difficulty?
I think one of the things that was explained to me as I came on board was that what we were trying to do is take a snapshot, an assessment of where we were, determine where we needed to go, and then this information would be used as the foundation at some point in the future when we go out for possibly a bond, because we know that the total cost of all of these needs far exceeds probably our bonding capacity. But it was a way to simply get it on paper and then to begin a process for planning and as to how we would move forward.
Thank you.
The next topic that we have here is looking at the replacement of relocatable classrooms. And again, we went about this with the understanding that if that was a desire of the school board, what would be the cost to do that? I think it was around $350 million. So it's a big desire, and you have a lot of relocatable classrooms. So the practicality of doing that across the board is pretty limited, I would guess. Ron says he doesn't have $350 million today to work on that. Yeah. But anyway, what we did was when we met at the campuses and we discussed the idea with the principal and the staff that were there, is we said, okay, in concept, if we could get rid of the relocatables, where would be the best placement for the classrooms? And so that's what we're trying to show in some of the illustrations. And when we move forward to sharing the master plans that have been developed for each campus, you'll see that that's based on that. And again, it gets to the point where it's kind of a combination of a wish list of things that you'd like to see happen, versus the reality of prioritizing what you can accomplish on individual campuses.
We did take a look at all of the students that are in relocatable, so the square footage that you see there reflects those classrooms.
When you were saying classroom addition or two-story classroom addition, is that a regular building or a two-story modular?
No, these are all based on permanent construction. Yes. And so you could see there, for example, at one of the schools, that we're just looking at square footage that is replacing the portables.
Yeah, and this was based on typical construction costs, and as Ron mentioned, construction costs are falling like crazy over the last few weeks, so this is probably a little high end on the numbers right now, but it's what costs have been typically. And I think the other thing to think about is getting back to the issue of equity, because what has occurred is you do have a lot of relocatables still on your newer campuses as well, but a bulk of them tend to be on the older campuses again, and it's a matter of going back and either, you know, maybe if you can't afford all new construction, you can afford the modular type construction that you built on some of the other campuses, two-story, which is still kind of permanent in nature. It's just not as, it has a longer duration lifespan than the typical modular buildings would.
Do we have a schedule then of the aging of the portables per campus, so we would know if we were to begin such a thing how we might go ahead and replace them campus by campus? Some of them are newer, they're in better condition and so forth.
We have identified all the relocatables that are over, I think, 25 years old. That's the threshold for modernization funding.
All right.
What you can do is get state funding to essentially replace them, and they'll give you some money to back that up. So
we have identified
those. Yes.
Thank you. We do. Thank you. I knew you were working on it. We probably did go over that at one point. Oh, you have.
Okay. Any other questions on relocatables? The last topic that we had here really relates to the funding availability for the district. What happens as far as state allocation board funding new construction projects, that's based on your enrollment, and you can apply new construction grant money to any elementary school, middle school, or high school site that you wish if you have the eligibility. So you're not really restricted campus by campus, but your modernization eligibility is unique to the campus that it's on. Your buildings have to be a certain year old, then they qualify for modernization. You've had some modernization projects that are a little bit unique in that Capistrano Valley High School, you have gone in and done some modernization of that facility. You've done some restroom changes, a few ADA issues, but there's still more to be done, and there's still quite a bit of eligibility that's available for that campus. So what these diagrams are doing, and that's why you only see certain campuses applying, is that the ones that have the green highlights are the campuses that the State Department views, or the Office of Public School Construction views, are eligible for additional funding through the state. And I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, what was the total number that we had? It was about $200 million, I think, was the eligibility for modernization through the state for these various campuses. And that essentially means that you have to come up with your 50% match money, about $200 million, to be able to do these projects.
For new construction.
Is that for the new construction?
Yeah, that's for new construction.
Okay, what was the modernization?
Like $32 million.
Oh, okay.
What percentage is that?
What percentage is the state?
It's a 50-50 funded program, so.
No.
Yeah, if you come up, there's both, well, yeah, it's both right now, 50-50 for modernization or new construction. Yeah, if it's not revised. It used to be 80-20, then it was 60-40, now I believe it's 50-50.
For example, you know, short the San Francisco Heights, I'm not showing any modernization eligibility there. And if those are older schools, have they used it up or...
I'm guessing that you have, because when we went through it campus by campus, if there are older facilities, some of yours have been modernized, and so you tapped in and captured all the state money that you could get. It's not saying that there still isn't things that need to be done. It's just if you determine that, yeah, it wouldn't.
I understand the new ones, because they're new, but some of these older ones, if you don't have it down here, we've already used it up.
I believe so.
What exactly is included in the modernization? If I'm looking at Castile Elementary, I see a base grant 1006434, for instance, and there's a little item there for 299 students. What exactly does that cover? Is that actually just classrooms, or
it's basically it's classroom space, and they develop the grant based on students. It says, is that 299?
Yes.
Students is. It says, it basically says you have 299 students worth of eligibility. Each student generates a grant amount. It's because those students are housed in classrooms that are of a certain age, so they determine the grant based on the kids that are in older buildings. And it's just a dollar amount that you get, and it generates, here it's showing a little over $1 million in a base grant. The fire access grant, there's some additional money that they give you in addition to the base grant for fire access, for fire sprinklers, for a few other things on the site.
So, for instance, if we look at the previous page, it would appear that for Castile we need $3.17 million worth of additional classrooms, and the modernization eligibility covers 1.068 million of it? Is that what I'm...
Yes, you can look at it that way, because you can kind of combine them. If you were to do a project on the site, the work that you're doing could be considered your match, as long as the work that you're doing is comparable renovation work, modernization work. If you're doing just new construction on the site, then you might want to do modernization with it just to capture the funding.
Sure.
Is there overlap between what you've got down here is the fire access grant amount and the DSA, structural safety, fire life safety?
There is overlap right now if you read these individual sheets. We've done a tabulation, and I didn't want to get into too much detail on that, but what we do is we would credit. If you decided to do certain things, say you're going to do your modernization, your ADA improvements, that would be a cost, and then if you capture grants, that would be a negative against it. So whatever scenario you come up with, we can show you what the total would be.
So all these numbers don't just add together to create one eye-popping grand total.
No. Well, it's still eye-popping, the total, but actually this is a good board, because all these green buildings are actually money being generated from the state. The only bad side of that is you have to have your matching money to capture the money that's there. So I believe that's all of the boards that we have presented here, and that's kind of the basic overlay. And as Ron mentioned, today's goal was just to kind of give you an overview of the things that we've looked at and an understanding of what we see are the individual components that need to be looked at for each school. And I think what we'd like to get into is a conversation about where's the district's priorities. You know, where are the priorities? Where is the certain goals? Or what are you trying to accomplish? We're looking at a 10-year window, so obviously it's not going to all happen at once, and with the economy the way it is now, it may be a while before realistically things can start happening, but the goal is to have a game plan so that even if it's just the placement of relocatable classrooms or improving lunch shelters somewhere, you're doing it with an understanding of what is a long-term plan for each of the campuses, so that you don't put stuff down and then find that you have to move it to accommodate for the long-term plan.
And I think this isn't a limited number of topics. I mean, this can be open to any series of other things. As you mentioned, maybe lunch areas. We have documented just about every need that is out there, be it, you know, fencing around sites, shade areas, just a very broad list of things that can be addressed for the next session.
What are we currently contracted with your firm to do next, if anything? Are we at a juncture where it's open?
Well, to complete the scope of work that we've been contracted for would be to have workshops with the board so that you could tell us what your priorities are and we could develop a final master plan that kind of represents what you'd like to see happen, and along with that master plan have actual site plans of each campus demonstrating what you want to do, having a budget and a schedule to go along with that so that you have an operational game plan. That would be the scope, but the board can always... they can stop the contract anytime they wish if for some reason they felt they didn't want to move forward with it.
So the next step's up to us?
Yes.
Okay. And then your recommended step would be what you just described?
Yes. I think for us to conclude our services, we're at a point where we really need to get input from the board so that we know how we're molding the master plan. We can't create it in a vacuum. We need to have the input.
And budget constraints are driven here by capital grants or capital funds, non-general fund money?
Okay. I hope you don't think me being too frank tonight, but coming here, I actually expected to see a master plan presented to us. We expected this first in August, then December, and I noticed when it said here that it's an interim presentation. To be frank, I actually see something that's just overlays that could have been developed from the existing site facilities needs, the needs assessment that's already been prepared. And from your discussion, it sounds like you backtracked and did a lot of work on that needs assessment that had already been done. We had 3 foot thick of documents for all the schools that presented what they wanted and their needs, and it sounded like you went back out and reassessed that, which is okay in finding some things, but we really needed, I think, a master plan presented by this time. As far as even asking us at this point what we want in a master plan, this was pretty much spelled out at the very beginning of this process, which I think was almost a year ago, where we want to know what the priority items are for each of the schools, how each of these priority items are going to affect other projects in that school and other schools. I mean, generally on a master plan, what you do is, and what I mentioned a year ago, is you put down everything that you want at every school site, and you see what that could be built out into in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years from now. And then you backtrack into each school site and you find out, okay, here's an item. If we build this one, it's going to affect this down the line. We're going to have to tear this out. So if you have that master plan of each school site, you know that you can put something in today that's going to not affect anything 20, 30 years ago, and you'll know which items are priority. You know, you need a critical path method, not only on schedule, but as far as practical items. First, you're going to be doing the items where we're below code, where, you know, we don't have handicap. Schools, for instance, we didn't have theaters and a couple of sites for 20, 30 years. Pools, whatever that is. I don't see anything that we're even close to coming at something like that. And to be frank, I'm a little disappointed in what's presented here tonight. It's just overlays of the needs facilities.
Well, I think our approach for tonight, we actually have master plans already prepared for all of the campuses based on the input that we received from the principals and from our site visits. What we were trying to do tonight was to kind of back up so that we could talk about generalities and talk about priorities, because what we didn't want to do was to present master plans as if they're a conclusion to the process and not having incorporated the board's thinking. For example, if when we go through this exercise, we say, well, it would be nice
to address all the relocatables, but that's just not practical. We need to do a master plan that shows us keeping the relocatables and doing other things that we've now deemed as being a higher priority. We want to get that kind of input so we can massage and model our master plans that are currently done so that when we present those to you, they reflect your thinking. I mean, we could have done that, and we kind of chose not to do that tonight because we wanted to start from step one and kind of go through the process. But we've accomplished, we've got binders all over the place of information, and we have presentations of actually site plan solutions for every campus.
Well, then I think we need to pretty much put that together in some sort of document form, because what worried me is you said we're going to have three or four more of these kind of meetings. We can't do that anymore. We have to have a master plan in place so that when something comes up, for instance, the theaters, we don't have to pull them out of the mix and upset a lot of other constituents and say, well, why didn't you do our school? We've got to have something in place, and we should have it in place in December. You know, and I don't want to go through three or four of these meetings. And I think master plans pretty much have a criteria how they're done. You know, you can ask each of us what you want to see in that. But if you have all the information, well, then go ahead and put it together. You know, give us something. Here's the priorities of all the school sites. This is what can be done. You know, this is item one, Truman Bennett. You know, whatever it is, this is what we have to have. This, I don't see where we're any further along as far as what you're presenting tonight than we were a year ago. And you may have all the information. You may have all the documents. Put it together. You know, I don't know what more you need from us to direct you as far as how master plan should be or what you're looking for from us for another three or four more meetings. I don't want to drag this on, you know, for several more months.
Isn't there a triage hierarchy? You've got to deal with the safety issues first and the ADA issues first.
I think one of the things that we were looking for, from a staff perspective, is a process that we're rolling out these needs, and then I have not heard from the board what is priorities in terms of what you would like to see taken care of first. Let's just say, for example, if relocatables are the most important, then of course we can assemble the plan and say here's the relocatables and how we would go about it. But what if restroom or ADA compliance issues are more of a priority? And I think we need an opportunity.
No. We need a list of those items. We need the portables. Okay, here's the sections for ADA compliance. You know, all of this stuff we need.
We have all of that broken down.
Well, that's what we need. And then, you know, we can't just say, okay, we're only going to be just doing all portables and taking care of all that. We have to look at every school site, every single thing that's going on. What's the priorities that have to be done? You know,
we have done that
at the beginning. Well, then that's what we need to have here presented to us.
And you want that to come with a recommendation on what should be done in which fashion?
That's what.
Okay.
That's why
we will provide
the consultants.
We will provide that.
I know it started.
I had a general misunderstanding that the board would be the ones that would be driving that prioritization process.
We don't want to micromanage it, and some people think we do. No, we don't. It's supposed to be presented to us.
We'll package that up and bring it back
with
to you.
With recommendations.
We'll do that.
That can be our next workshop. We can present the whole package if that's how you'd like to see
please.
It.
Please. And I know this happened before you came on, Ron.
I think, Madam President.
How this all began, actually, was that we had so many health and welfare needs and DSA items going on. But this is how it started. So we were expecting a little bit more, I suppose, of an item where we began with the very basics. Let's take care of the basics. Let's make sure that we have all of the DSA and safety items taken care of, the restrooms there, blah, blah, blah. And that's not really something that would be prioritized by us. We know that we have to have that done. So we sort of had expected that would be, you know, step one, two, or three, or whatever. Then when we start to get fancy, do we want to have a gym? Do we want to have a, you know, whatever, anything special, things like that, then we would have to get into more of a prioritization level where we know at this point that the basic health and welfare has been a priority simply because we understand the condition of some of our older campuses. So we wanted to bring them up to the basic level at least, restrooms, for instance, or that kind of stuff. I hate to get that basic, but that's where we are with some of the schools. And then move on. When you start to get fancy, we're more interested in our own prioritization.
I have a clear picture now. We'll be happy. We have that information. We'll be happy to package that together and bring it to you.
And I think that went along with
with what you have finally given us with the certification, the buildings that have not been certified by DSA. You know, that's really basic. We all got that letter. The superintendent's got the letter in October that we find, you know, we got a month late, but
we're getting it.
I understand, but that's, you know, that's basic. We have buildings that are not certified by DSA.
I have another request. When you're looking at library needs, cafeteria needs, perhaps if you all could look at multi-use, a library that is a cafeteria at noon, books around the walls instead of a separate, smaller library somewhere, an environment where the books are all the way around the wall so the students can sit.
Well, we have our marching orders for the next meeting.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. Corey, could I have you bring the screen down, please? Well, I can talk a little bit while we're waiting for this to come up. The next item is kind of being driven from two different directions. One is budget, and are looking at elimination of K-3 class size reduction as a budget-saving measure. And the other is an assessment of what we would need to do in order to house students as we move to now, hold on a second, let me get this where it needs to go. And the other is a needs assessment of what we would need to do in order to house students in K-3 class size reduction for next year as we have enrollment growth at a number of our schools. Before I even begin this evening, what I want to kind of say is a precursor to this is that we have two items we're going to look at. One is the budget sheet for RELOS, and then this is what's up on the screen now. And that is, in terms of taking a look at where we are, it's kind of a worst-case scenario. We haven't had time to really get into the nitty-gritty, but this is our first pass where we are. If we were to roll off of class size reduction and raise class sizes in grades K through 3 as a budget-saving option, as one of the options that we're looking at, there are 67 classrooms in the district, and this is approximate. We haven't double-checked this. This is just our first pass. There's 67 classrooms that we don't think would support loading much more than about 25. These were classrooms that were built more specifically for the 20-to-1 ratio. So to load them over 25 would probably get pretty tight and would be very difficult. So if we're to go the one direction, we do have some facilities costs involved, and I believe that this was reviewed with the board and was included in it was included last year in the budget as you took a look at that as well. What we're trying to do is take a look at what the costs would be involved in that to really go out and assess, take a look at which walls could be moved where, to kind of finalize that and pinpoint it more. One of the options we might look at and price out as we bring that back to you over the next couple of weeks is what would it take if we were to, say, roll off class size reduction in all schools except the ones that are listed here, say, roll the other ones up to 30-to-1 and these ones that could only go to 25, to take those to 25 and then develop a plan over the next couple of years if we were to eliminate that as to how we would remodel over the next couple of years and bring that out. It might be difficult to get all 67 classrooms remodeled to the size of the larger room, if that makes sense. So this is just simply to give you an idea of our challenge on the one hand.
Yeah. There are some of our class, our schools that have the maximum number of portables that you can bring on to them. Is that correct?
I believe that would be a true statement. We'd have to go back and look at each campus. But
I mean, so that is another element of this.
That's on the next slide I'm going to show you. So this is on the one side. If we eliminated class size, there's some costs that are associated with preparing classrooms or the inability to go completely across the district at 30-to-1.
Is this a complete list of the elementary schools?
No, it is not. This is just a list of those elementary schools where we believe we have that challenge.
It's a complete list of those schools with that challenge, so the rest of the elementary schools all have classrooms that can all support 30-to-1?
We believe that's correct, but I just want to make sure that this hasn't been double-checked. This is hot off the press this afternoon, so we're in the process of analyzing that and reviewing it. What this really was just kind of a kitchen table discussion to kind of get the topics out there so that we all knew what we were faced with. Any questions on that? Okay, I'm going to bring up the next one. This next handout was prepared by WLC, and this is going in the other direction. If we are going to maintain class sizes at 20-to-1, we have some expenses that we will need to incur in order to bring classrooms onto campuses, in order to house those students to maintain that. And like I said, this is kind of the worst case scenario. What we did is took a look at what it would cost to bring in all new relocatables. We didn't have time to really do an analysis of where we could move relos from one campus to the other and what might be involved in that. So we just took a quick look at how many relos we would need to bring in, and I believe the total was, if I am correct, 16. So we would be looking at, in the worst case, somewhere in the $2.8 million range to bring in 16 relocatables to house those students. So what this was is just to present to you that we have challenges on both ends that we need to analyze as we move forward. That was it, just to get the idea out there and get the conversation started. And then on the back of that paper, or the back of that sheet, is a listing of the schools and the classrooms that would be needed by school. So we're still refining this. We're still going through it. We're still making sure that we can't utilize space that may be available or other relocatables at other campuses that might be able to be moved. One of the challenges in moving our older relocatables is some of them have been moved a number of times, and you can only move a classroom so many times before it starts to take its toll. Especially the older ones that are wood framed, they
fall apart.
Yeah, they tend to get loosened up a little bit over time. Anyway, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So this sheet is keeping 20-to-1 with our growth in our schools.
Correct. Our projected growth at those campuses.
And where does the funding come from? To
out of the same pot of money that the theaters would be funded out of, as well as other other facilities things. So out of the community's facilities districts, as well as the other facilities funding mechanisms that are listed on there. That's why we have this challenge, is that we have a limited pot of money and we need to start prioritizing those issues.
Was there any state money for this?
No, there would not be any state money available for this unless we tried to capture new construction eligibility for it, which typically we wouldn't do.
Because they're portables?
I'd have to go back and look at that, but you typically don't want to use up your new construction eligibility at existing campuses. You want to save that to use when you construct new schools. But it is an option. It has been done by districts in the past. The challenge is, as we move forward, we have less flexibility with every dollar we spend, and as we look at developer fees and these other funding sources, money isn't going to be rolling in as it was in the past. Anyway, this
so the 16 portables that you identified we might need next year if we kept CSR 20-to-1, where I suppose you have the list of where they would actually go.
That's on the back of that sheet.
Is that what the back is?
That's what that back is. And like I said, we're in the process of refining it, double-checking it, going out. John was out today counting classrooms, measuring rooms to make sure that what we saw on paper was actually what was there.
And we have the added concern as to whether the campuses are too crowded to add more portables as well. We have to put double-decker portables?
Well, we haven't. John, have you tell? How deep have you taken a look at that?
What happened was, it would be okay with adding that portable. It goes above the size.
Right. Some of these may be subject to CEQA too, which could create a timeline, a time lag. This was simply to get the concept and the challenge in front of all of us, so we would. Well, I don't know if it's a challenge to overcome. Not that we don't have enough already.
This is true.
Thank you, Mr. Lebs. It's a lot to think about. Any other comments or questions? We will be recessing that. If we have anyone have any comments or questions from the audience, we have a small group here. I know you have a blue card. I do have your blue card. So now we're moving into closed session. We'll recess if anyone has any comments. We do have a question or a comment from Ms. Kutnick with regard to closed session. Thank you for your presentation this evening.
I just have one brief comment before I do. I just thought, because you could ask, I would just share. In a book here, in this workshop, the facilities, I think, are not the only one in the audience who kind of expected that at this point, 18 months into it, have you been out in the schools in the country area where you represent and talking to you, and kind of have an idea of priorities, and then that's all been discussed amongst you here. And at this point, I do think that the public has the right to know exactly how much this will involve in this process. I do not speak to you here tonight, but I will call her tomorrow. But I am making this a formal public records request to have all of the expenses related to the superintendent's economy. And that includes the responsibility to salary, all of the benefits, half a dozen employees that are working on this, any outside contractors, principals, investigators. And in any of my years, the prior decision here is that I know what I'm going to want, but I'd like to see how it's going to be spent in the very soon.
Thank you. Move to recess to closed session. Yeah. We'll recess to closed session. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
have it silent for a few minutes. We do have one more speaker. Come forward, Sam. Just, no, you have a seat right there.
There's Mike.
And pull the microphone over. There you go.
I'm Janet Gillis, and I wanted to address the board with the correlation between music and the math and science classes and how they go hand in hand. My son Ben is a senior at Tesoro High School. Ben would not be ranked 26th out of 711 students at Tesoro if it was not for his musical education that he received starting in elementary school. He hopes to join an Ivy League school in the fall and major in chemical engineering. According to Pulitzer Prize winner and best-selling author of The World is Flat, Thomas Friedman, America needs a national science project. The goal would be to make us energy independent in 10 years. In order to do that, we need more math and science students to help make America succeed. The correlation between math, science, and music is clear and simple. Early musical training helps develop brain areas involved in language and reasoning. There is an underlying link between music and spatial intelligence. Spatial intelligence is the ability to perceive the world accurately and to form mental pictures of things. Students of the arts learn to think creatively and to solve problems by imagining various solutions, rejecting outdated rules and assumptions. Recent studies show that the students who study the arts are more successful on standardized tests such as the SAT. They also achieve higher grades in high school. A study of the arts provides children with an internal glimpse of other cultures and teaches them to be empathetic towards the people of these cultures. Students of music learn craftsmanship as they study how details are put together painstakingly and what constitutes good as opposed to mediocre work. Through music study, students learn the value of sustained effort to achieve excellence and the concrete rewards of hard work. Music provides children with a means of self-expression. Self-esteem is a byproduct of this self-expression. Music studies develop skills that are necessary in the workplace. It focuses on doing as opposed to observing and teaches students how to perform literally anywhere in the world. Music performance teaches young people to conquer fear and to take risks. Finally, the No Child Left Behind Act lists the arts among the core academic subjects requiring schools to enable all students to achieve in the arts and to reap the full benefits of a comprehensive arts education. I am pleading with this board that no child be left behind. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.